day to you and yours, fellow good vibers. Speaking to you right now is JC Yon, and it's an absolute pleasure once again to grace the stage set by the fellas to drop a mix. And on this one, we're calling it Smooth Jazz Experience. And it's a compilation of music that you might know from the 80s, from the 90s, in basically a jazz format. What we have here is Rihanna, Juicy Drake, and Neo, just to name a few. Sit back and relax while I play this jazz for you and take the message that comes with the music. Once again, it's Jay, the CEO, coming on behalf of Good Vibes. And we live, baby. Let's go.
You are now vibing with Good Vibes Radio.
Assault, theft, or even sexual harassment. the media, government, churches, human rights activists, they all condemn the act, but on the ground, vendors and some citizens justified it, claiming women needed to be taught the lesson because they were disrespecting themselves by how they dressed. I tried to get many media houses interested in producing a documentary. Spread like wildfire in the marketplace where these three men drink and operate their businesses from. Everybody chose to ignore the fact that a woman had just been violated and chose to focus on the humor of three men choosing to rape a woman who, as they put it, was mentally unstable. This woman came to the marketplace to confront her rapists. They threw rocks at her, while bystanders told her to shut up and go, because she was making noise. Rape is an expected thing, and there is a sense that every woman must take necessary measures to ensure that she doesn't get raped. And if the crime of rape has been committed, then you as a woman were careless. This is the reason women do not report rape. Because when the crime of rape has been committed, the blame is pushed to the victim. And they are asked questions like, what were you wearing? But the community. For example, if the rapist has a family, then the victim is labeled a homewrecker if she reports the crime of rape. A lot of women, especially in rural areas, do not have the money to pursue support. So if brought before traditional leaders like chiefs, the most justice four, number five, number six. the only reason he has not slept with his seventh daughter is because this girl had to take medication so she could have her period for the entire year. This girl has her period from 1st January to 31st December just to keep her father. The issue to members of her extended family or even the community, a private meeting is held where the father or the man is asked not to do this again. Anything beyond that is considered a dishonor to the man. Because in my country, property is listed as follows: wife, children, idea that women and children can be owned is the reason we all turn away. But let me tell you this. Families make communities. Communities build society. And society builds a nation. And no nation can develop without the participation of and every one of its healthy citizens. Our families need to change. We all know what we're like as parents, as brothers and sisters. When someone in our home has been raped, we are filled with embarrassment and shame, so we are the first to push it under the rug. I want you to take this home and really think about it. Take a month, take a year, take 2 years, but really think about it and answer the question. What, Malawi, do you want?
Thank you.
Nairobi, in a small suburb called Uhuru. I am the eldest of three, all girls, and we were raised by mum and dad, as well as the villagers, aunts, uncles, close family, friends, who were a constant presence in those early years. My mum was working at the Commercial Bank of Africa, and my dad was at British Council. Our childhood was colourful, it was fun, and I distinctively remember unintentionally exploiting moments when one of my siblings was ill and using it as a chance to play doctors. I was aware from a young age, or at least I hoped, that my small effort would relieve her of whatever pain that she was feeling. However, having been responsible for a broken arm and a sprained elbow, I hardly think I was the right person for her in that time of my life. My grandparents on both sides were head teachers and teachers. We went to a private day school, and school was very important to us. That was not important at all. We were expected to learn, and we were expected to be number one in all our class ranks, something that my sisters and I luckily achieved. But I share this insight into my childhood to highlight the investment that was made in us as girls. We grew up affirmed, we grew up privileged, but we were affirmed of the endless opportunities that were available to us. And I share this experience and my insight with you because within the field of sexual and gender-based violence, you're often met with a sudden and sharp feeling of this could have easily been me. And I suppose because a lot of the work I do at Forward is within East Africa, so it hits quite close to home. Forward is an African-led organisation. For over 30 years, we've pioneered work on female gender mutilation and other issues related to sexual and gender-based violence. Last summer, we were visiting our international partners in Uganda, Akinamamawa Africa, and I had the chance to catch up with a really good friend of mine. I've known her since I was about 16. She, like me, is the eldest of all her siblings, and she's an all-round remarkable woman. Over the past 7 years, our relationship has been maintained mainly through WhatsApp communication and Facebook. And as good as they are, how do you, through WhatsApp, explain that the reason you're having to supplement your school fees by selling jewellery is not because you don't have school fees, actually it's because the person who pays your school fees is withholding them because you refuse to have sex with them? How do you explain over WhatsApp that it's not just as easy as reporting him because A, you're probably bribing his way, or B, that even if you did tell someone, you probably won't be believed and it will actually make things a lot worse for you than they already are. Now, sexual and gender-based violence happens to both men and women. Gender speaks to society's ideas of masculinity and femininity, and these ideas give rise to various forms of violence. But I'd like to draw attention to how in many contexts and in outrageous numbers, it disproportionately affects women and girls. In their lifetime, a third of all women will experience violence from a known partner or an intimate partner. And that doesn't even account for the women who experience violence within same-sex relationships. Over 200 million women and girls have experienced FGM. And we know that 71% of all human trafficking victims are women and girls. Now, these figures are likely to be a huge misrepresentation because within violence against women and girls, there are so many hidden players. Violence against women and girls is conflated by everything from climate change to capitalism, from religion to race. And so faced with this reality, it can become very overwhelming, and you're often faced with this idea that actually we're never going to be enough. We'll never make enough of an impact. Where does it start? Where will it end? And what's the point?
rush hour. So there'll be one remaining seat on the train carriage that I have spotted, but that simultaneously the guy has spotted. And so we'll stand around awkwardly for like half a second before he will more than likely offer me the seat. And I'm not gonna lie, in that moment I'm tired, so I will more than likely comply. Because as feminist as I am, in that second, patriarchy is convenient for me. Never mind the fact that we're both tired as each other. Because they have the personnel, the brilliance, and the people to have an impact. But what happens when these organisations become the perpetrators of violence, running a system of constant need, little hope of sustainability? And I'm talking about the foreign aid workers, the doctors and nurses who, even in this country, abuse their power to exploit locals and the general public. One person thing, because you see, like patriarchy, this abuse is deeply institutionalized and it is deeply structural. The district of Mpwapwa in the Dodoma region of Tanzania has a 51% rate of teenage pregnancy. Last summer, we sat in the veranda of a very small 7x7 cafe that one of the beneficiaries from our child mothers program set up. The Child Mothers Program is implemented by our partners Child Dignity Forum, and it offers, amongst other activities, enterprise workshops. So through her business, she was successfully providing for a 2-year-old son and herself, herself being only 17 years old. But it was a bittersweet moment as she went on to explain how out of her roughly 40 miles was rent demanded from her by the government. She explained how often customers, mainly men, would walk in and out, eat, drink, and refuse to pay her simply because she's a woman, because she's young. What's that happening? And literally, as we were sitting there, men were walking in, taking drinks, helping themselves, no payments were made. Offer three small concerted movements that are proving effective in ending sexual and gender-based violence. Small efforts that we cannot afford to negate. Number one, the rally cry. Me Too, Time's Up, Women's March London, One Ask. The global movement on sexual and gender-based violence owes a lot to online and on the ground marches. Women and men showing up, voice to speak truth to power. The New York Times recently reported that at least 200 prominent men had lost their roles in the entertainment industry, politics, the corporate world, in the wake of the Me Too movement. It has literally shifted the narrative around sexual and gender-based violence, allowing us to speak about it more openly everywhere. In the last 2 years, countless videos and footage of university lecturers sexually harassing their students has gone viral. 5 years ago, I sincerely doubt that Makerere University in Uganda would have sufficiently or appropriately or successfully dealt with a complaint of sexual harassment, let alone tweet one of their lecturers. And here we are, living in the ripple effect of the rally cry. Small movement number two, the local feminist network. This is a bit of a two part of one point, so I will start with the Loki Network. The women and girls we work with don't need a handout. They don't need sympathy. What they do want and need is a fair opportunity to be at the forefront of change that they want to see, and the agency to make those decisions. And that's the case for all the projects that Ward works on. I think of one of our transition fellows in the UK who identified the need for black students, particularly girls, to be engaged in issues of political representation, cultural practices, and identity. From a small pilot group of 10, she's been able to engage her head teacher in drawing up plans for annual workshops. I think also of our dream project in Sierra Leone, which is implemented by our partners GTG. In just 4 years, to our girls' clubs networks, 700 girls have avoided FGM. And in this last year, no one girl was cut, no one girl was married early. But I guess the most exciting thing about this movement is the emphasis on nurturing resilient feminist leaders, because you see, there's no point investing and providing leadership opportunities if these same women step into powers, into positions of power, implement the same patriarchal attitudes that we have today. We'll just be stuck where we are forever. So I'd like to ask all of us to think about how we're going to implement feminist leadership styles in our lines of work, at school, in our daily lives, choosing collaboration as opposed to, for lack of a better word, dictatorship. Instead of the foreign agenda. Small movement number 3. The individual woman. Within the non-profit sector, we all have the same issue of numbers equals impact. And it's a really, really unfortunate trend, because it's the way we view a lot of work to do on sexual and gender-based violence. So for example, we will enroll X amount of girls into a comprehensive sexual education program, or we will set up hundreds of gender desks in different locations, and then we'll pat ourselves on the back and say we're effectively tackling violence against women and girls. But we haven't considered the individual woman. We haven't considered her needs. We haven't considered the issues that may prevent her from accessing these services. Cost of fare, distance to the centre. Will she have to ask someone for fare, and will that compromise her position? One woman, one girl who has been invested in well may actually be the greatest display of impact. And so finally, I think in my line of work, it struck me that perhaps I'm disillusioned because I don't stop myself often enough to think about the fact that it's not just about figures and data. This work has an impact on the women and girls we work with, even if I don't see it. And that's the point. Small movements still contribute to the large mass of water. Thank you.